Welcome back, everybody. We are now to agenda item paper 1C. We're going to hear from Carlyan. If I could just remind you to check that your microphones are muted, it will just help everybody. And we will hear from Carlyan, and then we will take for questions on the chat line as we've been doing. So over to you, Carlyan.
So hi, everyone, and welcome to this session on common practice in the statement of financial performance. So we'll be looking at agenda paper 1C, which is the last of the four papers that we have brought to you today on common practice in the primary financial statements. So we'll be discussing five issues in this session, which are on this slide, and we'll start with three issues related to profit or loss, and then we'll move on. Oh, I'm getting some feedback.
Simon, we're getting a lot of echo for Carlyan.
Yeah, I think somebody had unmuted, and I think it's okay now.
So we'll start off with three issues related to profit or loss, and then we'll move on to two issues related to other comprehensive income. And like in the previous sessions, we'll have a discussion on each of these topics separately. So if we start with the first issue, so this issue is related to the relationship between employee benefits expenses and share-based payment expenses. And so there's an underlying accounting question to this whole section, which is, does employee benefits expense include or exclude share-based payment expenses? And so the IFRS taxonomy contains a line item for employee benefits expense. And if you look at the documentation label of that element and the words of the standards that are in that definition, you can conclude that actually this element should be used to tag amounts including share-based payment expenses. And we found that in practice, most companies use this element in the correct way, such as the example shown on the slide there. But we also found a few companies that use the tag incorrectly to tag amounts that exclude share-based payment expenses. And so we think part of the problem is that the IFRS taxonomy presentation and calculation relationships may not be as clear as they could be. So because the share-based payment expenses are not specified as a component of employee benefits expenses in those relationships. And so that's why our proposal on slide six is to add the existing element for expenses from share-based payment transactions with employees to the presentation and calculation relationships of the employee benefits expense element. And then in addition to that, we are also proposing to add an implementation note or an implementation label to the employee benefits expense line item to clarify that it should be used only to tag amounts which include share-based payment expenses or when share-based payment expenses are zero. So that brings us to our first question for the IATCG, which is whether you agree with the proposals in this section or whether you have any alternative proposals. So I'll hand it back to Anne to moderate the discussion.
Thanks, Carlyan. So as usual, please indicate through the chat line if you agree, and also indicate whether you'd like to speak. Suzanne.
It seems all very reasonable. With this one question is, could part of the confusion for filers who aren't doing it correctly be paragraph 2 of IS 19 that says the standard applies to everything except share-based payments? Just throwing that out there as a potential source of confusion, maybe, or not. So, and that's not a Workiva question. That's an annoying Suzanne Morsfield question. So.
Yeah, I think that's somewhat unfortunate that share-based payment expenses, in our view, it meets the definition of employee benefits expenses, but it's not included in the scope of IS19. It's got its own separate standard. So we can, yeah, see the reasons for that confusion.
Any other people who want to agree on question one? Okay, Carleen, look at that, lots of agreement. You can move on in your presentation. Thank you.
So let's look at the second issue now, which is in fact also related to share-based payment expenses, but it's a slightly different issue. So the issue here, if I go to slide 12, is that we've observed diversity in how companies tag total share-based payment expenses. So there's a requirement in IFRS 2 to disclose total share-based payment expenses. And so we sort of expected that companies would be using the tag that corresponds to this disclosure requirement. But what we found was that actually not very many companies use this disclosure tag. There are some that use it, but actually instead most companies use the common practice element that we have for expenses from share-based payment transactions with employees. And so we assume that in those cases, companies only have share-based payment transactions with employees and not with any other parties. And then finally, some companies also create unnecessary extensions to tag their total share-based payment expenses. And so this diversity in tagging makes it difficult for users to use the data. And we think, again, that the IFRS taxonomy labels may contribute to this diversity in some way, because if we look at the label of the element that we've, the disclosure element that we have to reflect the IFRS 2 requirement, it's a very long label. So it says total expense from share-based payment transactions in which goods or services received did not qualify for recognition as assets. And we think that label may be unnecessarily long. It reflects the words of the standard, but we think you could actually delete the part in which goods or services received did not qualify for recognition as assets without altering the meaning of the element. So that's why we are proposing to simplify the label for this element, to clarify its meaning. And then in addition to that, we also propose to clarify the relationship between the disclosure elements and the common practice elements by specifying this new calculation relationship and adding a common practice element for share-based payment transactions with parties other than employees to complete the logical breakdown. Now, one thing I would like to note is that while our proposals, we think they would be an improvement, so they would reduce definitely the unnecessary extensions, the issue remains that in a case when a company only has share-based payment transactions with employees and not with other parties, then a company has the choice between two tags to tag their total share-based payment expenses. So that results in diversity in practice and users having to analyze two elements if they're interested in total share-based payment expenses. We did think about requiring double tagging in this case, but we don't think it's appropriate here. So we would very much welcome any suggestions from you on how to address this issue. So that brings us to our second question for the IDCG, which is whether you agree with the proposals in this section.
Okay, Ashok has agreed. As have Maria, Peter, Rachel, Suzanne, Shelley, Christine, Tanya, Ling, Ronald, John, Dirk. Okay, any people want to speak? Right, Carly, and you're doing a great job. Lots of agreement. No, it's fine. Dasuki would like to comment. Dasuki, please comment.
Yes. Well, First, I strongly agree. So because this extension link role, share-based payment, doesn't have structure, tree hierarchy, you know. So there are few hierarchy in this link role. So it is not useful to make a tagging because the hierarchy and the tree structure gives the tag the meaning of the tag, So I mean that this proposal is agree.
Thank you, Dasuki. Thank you. Binla.
Thank you, Anna. Yeah, I just have a comment in relation to your proposal to simplify the labels. I noticed that in the earlier paper, some of the solution you actually suggest, you know, additional information in the standard labels. Well, in this particular case, I'm not sure you have any evidence or any observation to support your conclusion that actually the long label is the contribution to the confusion in the tagging. That's my comment.
Yeah, it's more of a guess. It's more based on our own observation. I personally think it's quite an unnecessarily long label, and it would confuse me. But we haven't had direct contact with preparers to better understand what are the sources of their confusion.
Okay, thank you.
So, Kalyan, will you ask? Consultation document, will you ask if that's a source of confusion as part of your proposal?
I guess we can highlight that it's a sort of an assumption that we've made that this contributes to the confusion, mm-hmm. And that people can comment on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any further comments from members on this question two? Okay, Carleen, if you'd like to take us to the next section.
Okay, so the third section is about unwinding of a discount on provisions. And so the issue here is that we have an element called expenses due to unwinding of discount on provisions. But at the moment, the labels of that element don't make it very clear whether you should be using that element to tag amounts that relate to provisions, including provisions for employee benefits. So that means it would include things like the net interest on defined benefit pension obligations, or whether it excludes such amounts. And so we observed in practice, well, we looked at a relatively small sample within the FPIs. We concluded that there, in that sample, all the companies we analyzed used it to tag amounts that excluded provisions for employee benefits. And we have one example on the slide there. So our proposal is to basically align the labels of the existing element with how it's being used in practice. So that's what we have on the slide as approach A. Now, we had a bit of a dilemma here because we think you could also see our proposed change as changing the meaning of the element. And in that case, it could be argued that actually it's more appropriate to create a new element and assign that new meaning to that new element and delete the old element. However, and that's labeled approach B on the slide. However, we rejected approach B because we think it would be a bit of a hassle, as most companies currently use that element would need to re-tag their financial statements using the new element. So what we're proposing is approach A, which is just to amend the labels of the existing element and so that it's in line with how it's currently being used. And then in addition, we also propose to sort of tidy up the label of this element a little bit so that it's aligned with the labels of similar elements that we have in the taxonomy for unwinding in the statement of cash flows and in the reconciliation of provisions. And so that's also aligned with the wording of IAS 37, the standard on provisions. And so that's why we're proposing to use this wording arising from passage of time in the label now. But we would retain, as you can see, the wording unwinding of the discount would be retained in the documentation label. So I'll now open it up again for discussion of question three on this section.
If members could please indicate if they agree with the question or if they have a comment. Suzanne.
I think we had the question that was following up on that you'd analyzed half, I think, of the filers. And so are there filers that that potentially, is there a bigger pool of them that are doing it in quotes correctly? And what are the ramifications for those folks, or unintended consequences, perhaps, of, you know, will they, you know, I guess it's just sort of following up on who's doing it correctly. Do you just assume that they'll keep using this normal or using the same elements, just that with a change label, et cetera? So, does that make sense? I sort of rambled there at the end.
So are you asking whether companies that, if they, so yeah, you're right, we didn't analyze, for this one, we didn't analyze the full sample of, I don't know, 400 plus FPIs. We just took what we thought was a reasonable sample. And based on that, I think we can conclude that the majority of companies would be using it in the way that we found. But yeah, as you say, that doesn't rule out that companies might be using it to tag amounts which include provisions for employee benefits. And so if companies provide or report such an amount, I think we would expect them to create an extension.
Okay. And then the other, maybe one other thing is, so in the modification to the standard label where it's kind of adds other provisions in there, if I kind of got that right, arising from passage of time, comma, other provisions. Is the county meeting generally for other provisions in IFRS provisions other than employee benefits? And so that's sort of why you don't feel the need to add that extra bit of verbiage that you have in the documentation label that makes that clear.
I think this touches on a point that Peter made this morning, because we made a similar, we have a similar mm-hmm. change in the appendix to paper one. So the way that we have currently modeled it in the IFRS taxonomy is that the term provisions means the total including employee benefits. And then right. we use the term other provisions right. to mean provisions other than employee benefits. And I believe this is based on a paragraph in IS1. So IS1 mm-hmm. has a requirement yeah. to disclose provisions as a minimum line item. And then it goes on to say, for example, an issuer shall disaggregate provisions into provisions for employee benefits and other provisions. So it's that paragraph in IS1 yeah. that this model reflects. But as Peter mentioned this morning, this may not be the way that people currently look at it, because the right. the scope of, they might think provisions means what's in scope of IS 37. So we yeah. have a bit of a communication issue there, really.
I was wondering, because the documentation label has that a little bit expanded, where it does make it really clear. I think that's what I noticed was maybe a little different here. And I guess the documentation label, you have more scope for words than you would in the standard label, but that sort of is where you're kind of really making it clear, I guess, there, that it's other than employee benefits.
Yeah, I guess we could consider putting it in the standard label as well. It's just a trade-off between length and clarity.
Yep. No, I get it. No, I was just sort of we were noticing that, so that's there. No. And then you might have perhaps some filers are used to seeing other as sort of, and I know
miscellaneous,
as miscellaneous, exactly. So, but I suppose the combination of the standard label change and the documentation label hopefully gets people in the right path. So.
Thanks, Suzanne. Lewis, would you like?
I just got one more question emailed into me. Can I quickly ask that, or I can shush and let Lewis have a
Lewis, I can hear you. What to you next? Suzanne's just got one more question to ask.
Okay.
Suzanne.
I feel bad, Lewis. I'm waiting to hear from you all day, and now I'm, you know, stopping that. So, just again, do you have any thoughts on filers that are using it now as intended, and how this might change might impact them? So I think it's kind of circling back to my original question, but really making sure you get a chance to answer that. So.
I'm not sure I fully understood that question. Could you maybe expand on it a little?
No, it's just the filers who are using it as correctly of the ones you've seen, and just have you thought about how this change will affect them? And you're just I think what you said earlier, and just kind of clarifying that you think they'll just keep using the same as normal or create an extension that anchors.
If they've been using it with the meaning that we put here, so excluding provisions for employee benefits, then they can continue to use the existing element. However, if they used it to tag an amount including, then they should create an extension.
Okay. That anchors to, stuck on the anchoring thing.
I'll have to get back to you on that because I haven't thought through the anchoring implications.
No problem. Okay, sure. Thanks. I'm done now.
Okay, thanks, Suzanne. Lewis, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Finally.
Great.
So first off, I want to say, generally support approach A, but I want to make an observation, so this question about whether you deprecate or not deprecate, it's always a tricky proposition. There's the impact on the users when you make a change like that. But in this particular scenario, I would say from a US GAAP perspective, we would not be deprecating really as a matter of course, because what you're really trying to do here is you're really not changing, if I understand what you've described, you're really not changing the meaning of the element. What you're trying to do is clarify for those that have not interpreted it the way you had originally intended. So you're adding wording to really narrow it so that those that did not quite get it the first time hopefully get it the second time. And so in those cases, we would generally, not deprecate, because that does more harm than good. Clearly there's going to be some filers that we'll have to re-tag, but that was the expectation all along. But those that were doing it correctly should continue doing it correctly, and everyone should be getting what they want after that. So, at the end of the day, approach A makes the most sense from my perspective. And again, as a general principle, we try to only deprecate when we've really changed the meaning. And that's really not what you're doing here. You're trying to, improve interpretation of the original meaning.
Thanks, Lewis. Christine, would you like to come in?
Sure. I wanted to follow up on Lewis's point. I really underscore and emphasize his point, because I think from a data consumption point of view, every time you deprecate, and even though you might provide those relationships between the new element and the deprecated element, it's not always the case that filers would necessarily follow the replacement or the suggested replacement. So I think from a data consumption point, if you can avoid deprecating, and as Lewis pointed out, if it's just simply clarifying the definition of an element, then I think you should, you know, side with being a bit more conservative and, you know, just keeping the element as is and modifying the label.
Thanks, Christine. Anybody else like to come in? Okay, Callie, would you like to take us to your next issue?
Okay. So we now have two issues left, which both relate to other comprehensive income. So the first issue that starts on this slide relates to foreign currency differences. And so exchange differences on translation to a different presentation currency are recognized in OCI. And those exchange differences, they can arise, or they mostly arise, on the translation of foreign operations. And in that case, the standard IS21 specifically says that those exchange differences are reclassified from OCI to profit or loss on disposal of the foreign operation. However, exchange differences can also arise on the translation of the financial statements of a parent or a standalone entity to a presentation currency that's different from its functional currency. And the standard is basically silent on that, but it's pretty clear, we think, that such differences are never reclassified to profit or loss. And so the issue here is that the IFRS taxonomy only provides element to tag the foreign exchange differences that are reclassified, and we have no elements to tag those that aren't reclassified. And we think there's a need for such elements because the standard requires you to separately present the reclassified and the not reclassified OCI in your statement of financial performance. So in our sample, we found a few companies that presented this type of non-reclassified foreign exchange differences. And so we are proposing to add elements for this type of non-reclassified foreign exchange differences. And in addition, we're also proposing to amend the labels of the existing elements that we have in the reclassified section of the taxonomy to specify that they relate to foreign operations. So that's shown on this slide. So yes, let's move on to the question on this section. Do you agree with these new line items that we're proposing to create and the change in the labels of the existing line items?
Right, I'm just waiting to see if we're getting some agrees coming through on the chat line. Peter's agreed. I'm just waiting to see if others. Oh, there you go. Yes, Carlian, lots of agreement. Lots of agreement. Thank you, people. Any questions from anybody? Any comments? Carlian, it looks like members have given you a lot of support on that one. Would you like to go to your next issue?
Good. Let's move on to the final issue in this paper, which is about the presentation of other comprehensive income before and after reclassification adjustments. So in IFRS taxonomy, we have three elements for each type of OCI, which is for the item presented before reclassification adjustments to profit or loss, then the reclassification adjustments, and then for the OCI after reclassification adjustments. And an example of that is shown at the bottom of this slide. And so the issue here is that in practice, we observe that companies sometimes mix up the before and after reclassification tags. So they'd use the before element to tag after amounts and vice versa. And so again, we think that the labels of the IFRS taxonomy elements may contribute to this, and they may not be as clear as they could be. So if you look at the standard and documentation labels of an example element on this slide, you'll see that they don't actually indicate that one is before reclassification and the other is after. The company would need to look at the presentation or the calculation relationships to figure out which one is before and which one is after. So that's why we're proposing to add this to the documentation label, so either before reclassification adjustments or after reclassification adjustments. And then in addition, another issue that we found is that there's diversity in how companies tag amounts when the reclassification adjustments are zero. So in that case, companies tend to present a single amount of OCI, which presents both before the reclassification adjustments as well as after. And they don't disclose reclassification adjustments because there aren't any. And we think in that case, it would be clearest for the users of the data if that single amount was tagged twice using both the before and the after elements. So we propose to include an implementation note to that effect. Now, we realize that this issue of when to double tag, when it is appropriate, that is an issue that's broader than just this case. Even this morning, we had a discussion about double tagging. So we're proposing to have a think about it and bring you back a more general policy on when we think that we should be recommending double tagging, and that would then apply to the whole taxonomy. So that brings me to my final question. So do you agree with the proposals? And also, are you aware of any other cases where double tagging might be a good solution that we should be looking at?
Ashok agrees. He's the first to lodge his agree vote. Anybody else agree? Daisuke, would you like to make a comment?
Yes, just short comment. This issue is whether primary financial statement or notes, I think. So I agree this proposal.
Okay, thank you for that. And Anna's meant she's looking forward to the policy discussion we will have about this double tagging in the future. Okay, Carlyn, any final comments from you?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. So I'd like to thank members for all the work they've done on these papers, this set of papers, and all the helpful feedback for staff, because staff have done so much work bringing us these proposals. But I do thank members for the time that they've spent on the papers and the feedback they've been giving us today. Now, we're now scheduled for another break where we're running a little bit ahead of time, but I would like to stay to the program. So we're going to break again. We'll be reconvening at 15:15, so that's 3:15 UK time, for paper number 2. So we're going to take a break now. Thanks, Carlyn.
Thank you.